Good evening, everyone. Have a seat. How are you? Good, good. I'm expecting that the rest of you are Carlton supporters. Sorry about that. I'm with you. We're in our family series tonight, and you know what that means. I can tell stories. Oh, yes. Actually, I've only got one. But I had this funny conversation with our daughter, Aroha, who will be squirming out in the foyer right now, a little while ago when she came in. I've been making them for lunchtime on weekends, like a plate of various things. So, you know, with the hope that they would eat something healthy, sort of putting a whole lot of different things on a plate, and then they can sort of graze away at it, as they are prone to do. And she came and just said to me, "Can I make a lunch plate today?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, you can do that, but you have to make sure that 2/3 of the plate have healthy things on them." And she goes, "Oh, of course, Mummy. You know, I'm going to be a mama one day myself too. I can manage things like that." So she was very tut-tut at me about the whole thing. Then I came out an hour later and found that the only things that had been eaten off the plate were the not healthy things. So I guess, you know, I'm going to be a mother in the future, but right now I'm a kid, right? Yeah, then you have to force feed them the good stuff. We're talking tonight about creating a rhythm. And it's one of those really important things in family life. I don't know how you identify with family. It's going to be different for everybody in this room. But there are some things that we can learn from Jesus about how he dealt with family in the way that he gathered around him disciples, friends that he spent time with and he built a ministry with. And Jesus at one point actually said, "The ones who do the will of my Father are my brothers and sister and mother." You know, he used those terms because what Jesus understood was that the mission of God has to take place within the context of family. Family was God's idea from the beginning of time, and he set family in motion. And that it both encompasses the nuclear family, but it also encompasses the family that he creates to build his mission. People who join together, join forces, come together, have relationships that interact so that they can be obedient on the mission of God. And so you might be coming tonight and you may be thinking very much about your nuclear family, and that is awesome. Your nuclear family needs a rhythm. For some of you who are youth and young adults, you'd be thinking, "Oh, well, I've sort of, you know, I'm in my nuclear family, but there's sort of a foot in and a foot out. I'm sort of getting to that point where I'm going to start to make my own decisions and my own choices." And I want to say to you, you need a rhythm in your nuclear family. There's going to be times for you where you can make decisions and choices that are going to affect the people in your nuclear family. And having a rhythm, having values that you set that allow those relationships to go deep, that have challenge attached to them so that everybody in the family unit is growing. It's actually all of our responsibility, whether you are a son or a daughter, whether you're a mother or a father, whether you're a sister or brother, or whether you are a friend who speaks about another person in family terms. I think about my family. I have my nuclear family that I grew up with. I have my nuclear family that I now live with. But I also call friends of mine who are on mission with me my family. Those are the ones, those are the people who I'll go to and I'll spend time with, and I'll tell them about the intimate stuff that's going on in my life and the deep intimate parts of my soul. I'll tell them about the struggles that I have. I'll tell them about the vulnerabilities that I have, and we'll speak face to face and we will become vulnerable with each other. And in doing that, what we're doing is we're creating a rhythm to keep each other growing and to keep each other sharp. So tonight, God may be speaking to you about your nuclear family. He may be speaking to you about your friendship network. But I want you to consider that he is wanting to build within you disciplines and values that need to take a rhythm so that you can influence the people in your life and you can allow people to influence you. And then we grow together. Yeah? There's this verse in Colossians chapter 2 and verse 6, and it says this: "So then, just as you received Christ Jesus as Lord, continue to live your lives in him, rooted and built up in him, strengthened in the faith as you were taught, and overflowing with thankfulness. Paul uses this kind of image there, being rooted in Jesus, having your foundations, your roots in him, and growing in that context. And what ends up happening for us is that when we are in the family of God, when we have people around us who have their roots also growing into Jesus, we end up growing stronger together. It's simply the way that it happens. Now, I want to show you a tree, actually. This is a giant sequoia tree, mostly found in California. And they're a type of redwood, but they are absolutely huge. They're not the tallest trees in the world, but they are the biggest trees en masse because they have such thick kind of trunks. And this is called the giant sequoia tree. In some places, the oldest of the trees have bark that is 3 feet thick. Like, wow, yeah? They're absolutely huge, mammoth trees, and a lot of people come from all over the world to California to have a look at them. They need the perfect kind of climate to grow. But there's some really interesting things about the sequoia tree. They grow to about 100 metres tall. So as I said, not the tallest in the world, but that's pretty tall, yeah? 100 metres tall. But they have a root system of 150 kilometres. Yeah. 100 metres tall, 150 kilometres worth of roots. Extraordinary, right? They can only survive in a group. They can't survive anywhere else. Because the way that they survive and the way that they grow tall and they grow strong is that all of their roots go out and they interlock with the other trees around them. And so there's this growing into kind of nature that's happening with these trees. They grow in family. They grow in a grove together. And the root systems all come out and they kind of climb over each other and they twist around each other. And so if you get a sequoia tree that starts to get sick, it's actually quite difficult for it to fall because it's being held up by the root system of the other trees around it. It's actually a really special metaphor, I think. Because so often I think it in a church context, in our faith context, what we find is that people tend to, when they start to get doubts and they start to get wearied by life, what they'll tend to do is step out of community. It's the same in family. When things are going wrong, what people will tend to do is they'll step out of family in the hope that somehow they will stumble across something that will make them feel better or feel safer or grow better. But in actual fact, we need each other. We need the stability of the people around us, the intertwining, the interlocking of the relationships to help us grow to the ultimate destiny that God has for us. It's what he designed for us. He always had family in mind. And so as these giant sequoia trees have these interlocking roots that come around each other and they grow, what happens is the chance of their survival and the chance of them reaching the highest height that they were ever destined to reach is greater the more trees they are interlocked with, the more root systems that they are interlocked with. The other really interesting thing about the sequoia tree is that they have these little seeds. They're only about 3 centimetres big. And they grow to the biggest of trees, but they stay inside a cone for up to 20 years. And you know what releases them and bursts them open so that they can actually germinate in the ground and become a tree? Fire. They won't burst open and they cannot become a seed that is fertile in soil without fire. And so these groves often will have fire coming through, but the trees survive because they've got such a good root system and they're in a clump together. But what happens as the fire comes through and even the bark protecting the trees themselves is that the seeds start to pop open. And you get more and more giant sequoias being planted around. It's an extraordinary process, and I think has such a powerful image for us about how much we need each other. And this is something that that Jesus modeled for us. And I actually just want to look really quickly at the rhythm that Jesus created with the people that he pulled around him, his disciples, and he spoke about them as family. And we're actually just going to look at a really small part of Scripture. One thing that I really love about the book of Mark is that Mark dives right in and he starts getting straight to the point. And just in the first chapter of Mark, we can see the rhythm that Jesus created for his family of followers. We can see this cycle that he created. And he actually created a rhythm around the values that he wanted this family to have. And the very first one that we see is invitation. Mark chapter 1 and from verse 16, it says, as Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into a lake, for they were fishermen. That's a good reason. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. And at once they left their nets and followed him. And when he had gone a little further, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat preparing their nets. And without delay, he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. And Jesus, the very first thing that Jesus models in regard to rhythm is this idea of inviting, invitation. I want to invite people into my inner circle. I want to invite people to follow me. And he doesn't just do it at this point, at the start of his ministry, but you actually see it right throughout the Gospels again and again and again. As he walks by Levi, the tax collector, and he says, hey, come follow me. He's doing it all the time, constantly inviting people into his realm, into his world, into his life, so that he can impart himself into them. And it's one of the things that becomes a standard rhythm of Jesus. It's something that as you look throughout the rest of the New Testament, you see it in his disciples as well. They invite. As the church, as the early church was planted right throughout that region, you see again and again these apostles of Jesus inviting people to be a part of it, to be a part of family, to be the body of Christ, Paul calls it. And there's this invitational kind of idea where Jesus is saying, I have something that I want to impart to you. And this is not just a case of looking at others within our church community and saying, oh, I've got something that I want to impart to this person, so I'm going to invite them into my world. But actually, this is a family context as well. I mean, how often is it that in our own nuclear families, we see our families as just a place where things happen to us? Or things happen around us. But we don't necessarily see ourselves as influencers of the family unit. You know, have you considered the possibility that you could invite your sibling into your world to follow in your footsteps? Not in an arrogant and pompous way, but in a genuine and true way where you're saying, come. Let's do life together. Let's not be apart. Let's not push each other apart. Let's not be separate, but let's do this together. Where our interests are, where our challenges are, to invite that person into your midst and allow them to learn from you, and also to encourage them to invite you to do the same, to learn from them. When I think back over my life of all of the people who have invited me into their world, I think of those people as family. And as I was thinking about this and I was thinking how Jesus did it, there was one person who came to mind. There are a ton of people in my life who I could say this about. There was one person who came to my mind, and it was Pastor Tim. And years ago, when I started on the staff at Crossway, he invited me into his close circle. And he started to teach me about theology. And he started to encourage me to get educated. And he started to speak life into me. And he started to talk about the prospect of me being a teacher. And he started to impart that in me. He's probably squirming, I'm sure he is, right now, as he does. But it was this profound time for me. And the interesting thing about it is that it never stopped. Even as time changes and as roles change and as people move in and out, there's always someone that I know I can go to spar with about a scriptural idea or a teaching idea. Why? He invited me in. And the question is, and as we're talking about creating a rhythm, are there people in your life who you're doing that with? Are there people in your family who you need to bring closer? Because Jesus gives us this really clear example of invitation. The passage continues on and it says, they went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. And people were amazed about his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. There's a statement. The teachers of the law did not have authority. That's what they're saying. So Jesus came in and he spoke to them with authority. And what that has a connotation of is that he spoke to them with challenge. He came to them, he sat with them, and he taught them about who God was and what the scripture said and what it meant. But he was challenging them. He was asking them to change. He was asking them to change their perspective, change their life. You see, the second thing that Jesus models for us in this rhythm is challenge. Do you know this is one thing we do really badly as humans? Challenging. We tend to be really polite, most of us. Some of us are just downright rude, but mostly we tend to be quite polite, even as the people of God. Oh, you know, such and such is going on with such and such. Oh, well, it's easier for me to talk behind their back than it is for me to go to them and challenge. But the thing about family is that when you bring people close enough, there becomes a common language. And the person knows that you love them, even though you challenge them. That's the beauty of family, yeah? Just a couple of weekends ago, our ARC community foster carers went away for a weekend. And it was a bit unfortunate. We had this great weekend away, and then on the final night, four people got gastro. And so this kind of outbreak came across us, and it was really not good at all. But as we were sitting there in the afternoon, one of the guys was talking about man flu and saying how, you know, you can only have man flu once because it's fatal, and it's a real disease and it's a real problem. And he was just carrying on, and we were all laughing about that. And then when he got home, he got gastro. And so the comment came up on Facebook from one of the women who was there. He actually got hospitalised, so it was pretty serious, right? But the comment comes up on Facebook after he's been hospitalised, I'm glad it wasn't man flu. Now, to anybody else, that would have looked so wrong. That was just so inappropriate. And how dare somebody say that like that? But the thing is that when you're family, you get the joke. And he did. Because there's an inside language that happens. It allows us to challenge each other. It allows us to come to another person and say, hey, I'm really concerned about this. Out of my absolute love for you, I'm not going to let this pass. I actually want to challenge you on this. You know, this needs some changing. This needs some prayer. This needs some thought. Can we sit together and talk about this? Because it's just something not quite right. You see, the other side of challenge is that you have to allow yourself to be challenged too. Yeah? I don't know how many people have come and said to me, can you mentor me? And I've stated up front, I'm going to tell it like it is. And then when we've got to a point of challenge, that mentorship has sort of dissipated, strangely. Because there's something within us that says, don't tell me the truth. Don't tell me what you really believe is going on with me. I'm actually going to put my hand up to that. But being challenged is a part of growth. It was like I was saying before with those seeds, it's when the fire comes through that they are birthed and they are opened up and they can germinate and they can go into the soil. So Jesus had this rhythm of being able to challenge people, and especially those who were close to him. I don't imagine that Peter would have survived a statement like, get behind me, Satan, if he were not in close familial relationship with Jesus. It's only where you come into that place of intimacy and close relationship that you can say the hard things. And one of the things that I love to say to people, if it's just a case of creating a habit and creating a rhythm like this, is just to ask, what did God say about that? That decision that you're about to make, that thing that you're about to do, or that great idea you just had, what did God say? What's God saying about it? And if that becomes a standard part of your vernacular, It's actually quite easy to have that as a rhythm in your family life. The passage continues on in verse 23. And just then, a man in their synagogue who was possessed by an impure spirit cried out, "What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." "Be quiet," Jesus said sternly. "Come out of him." And the impure spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. And the people were all so amazed that they asked each other, "What is this? A new teaching and with authority? He even gives orders to impure spirits and they obey him." News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. And as soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the house of Simon and Andrew. And Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. So he went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them. And that evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and the demon-possessed, and the whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. This next thing that Jesus models for us is compassion. And right there, Mark just outlines 1, 2, 3 examples of the compassionate heart of Jesus. He sees someone who is overcome by an evil spirit and he heals him. And then he comes to Peter's house and his mother-in-law is sick and he heals her. And then all of the town, it says, come to the door with all of their sick and he heals them all. You see, part of Jesus' normal rhythm of life was compassion for others, concern for others. Now, this is a value that I think we would do very well to place at the centre of our family life. Compassion, concern for other people, being prepared to step out and sometimes uncomfortably for the sake of being compassionate to someone else and showing the love of Christ, showing the love of God to someone else. I want to say to you, if you've got a passion about a cause, be passionate about that cause. Create it as part of your normal rhythm of life. Share it with the people who are closest to you. Share it with the people who you call family. Make sure that you're building on that compassion and you're not letting it die out. Let your compassion be with a passion. Let it be something that you strive toward. Let it be something that is a rhythm in your life. Because it's so often we look at all of these different things in life and we go, I can only do so much. And it's all so big and I don't know where to start. Well, I want to say to you, if you make it a rhythm in life, then you will chip away a bit at a time. And time and again, you will see God changing situations and people through you. His rhythm was invitation, challenge, and compassion. And then it continues on. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." And Jesus replied, "I love this. As an introvert, this is my favorite verse in the whole of the Bible." Simon comes and says, "Everyone is looking for you." And Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else." "Let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That's why I've come." It's like, oh, all the people are looking for me? Excellent. Well, stage right. He's just out of there, you know. Everyone's looking for me. I don't want a bar of that. But the really interesting thing about this is that Jesus shows us here, or Mark tells us about here, Jesus going off to a solitary place to pray. And this is a rhythm we see again and again. You know how I was saying before that the thing I love about Mark's gospel is that he gets right in there and he just gets on with it. And he tells the story and he tells it quickly and he just gets through it. One thing he never, ever skips over is telling us again and again and again how Jesus withdrew to the lonely places to pray. He would get up in the morning and he would go to a lonely place to pray, to the solitary place. He would spend time in the lonely places. He would avoid the crowds and he would pray to the Father. This is something that doesn't get skipped over in the Gospels, and certainly not in the Gospel of Mark. In fact, Luke goes as far as to say in Luke chapter 22, verse 39, that Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. Now, when he said that, he was talking about Jesus going to the Mount of Olives, to the Garden of Gethsemane, so that he could pray before he was betrayed and crucified. But Jesus, at this point, where Luke is talking about it, he says he went there as usual. So it was a normal place for him to go. It was a normal thing for him to do, to take time out to spend with the Father. Now, if there is one thing that is going to allow us to have a rhythm that grows us and grows our roots deeper into God, it is solitary time with him. You may be the busiest person on the planet, and I don't mean busy as in things to do, but busy in your demeanor. You can't stop, you know, fidget, and just talking, and extrovert, and people, and stuff, and whatever. You need solitary time with the Father. You need it in order to grow. And when I think about those sequoia trees again, it makes me think about that. You know, 150 kilometres worth of roots going down to produce a pretty impressive tree that's only 100 metres high. You know, the tree itself is impressive, but the roots are seriously impressive. And for us as people who want to grow into God, to grow into Jesus, to grow as people in family who have values that complement one another, we have to understand that growing down first is the most important thing. Because when those roots are deep and when they are interlocked, we have a chance of fulfilling the destiny that God has set before us. We need to grow downward first. And in actual fact, there's a few examples that I have of what it looks like to grow downward first. So when you grow upward first and you just think about what people see and about what the success story will be, you think a lot about your reputation. You swing between pride and insecurity. But when you grow downward first, you carry the light yoke of self-forgetfulness. When you grow upward first, you have a very hard time saying no. When you grow downward first, you say no often, even to good things, so that you can give yourself fully to the things that matter most. When you grow upward first, you're likely known for talking a lot. When you grow downward first, you're known especially for listening well. When you grow upward first, your time horizon is rarely more than 1 to 3 years, and often much less. But when you grow downward first, your time horizon often includes future generations and even eternity. When you grow upward first, you often say, "I need to do more faster." I'm so guilty of that. And when you grow downward first, you say, "Lord, multiply the little that I have." When you grow upward first, you struggle with anything that feels unproductive, including prayer and rest. But when you grow downward first, you know that fruitfulness requires seasons without production, so you're able to enjoy rest, solitude, and silence. When you grow upward first, even when life is calm, your heart is restless and discontent. But when you grow downward first, even when life is stormy, your heart is calm. You see, Jesus modeled this for us as so profoundly important, one of those values that is really important, and it has to be a part of our rhythm. The interesting thing, though, often about it is that we look at it as our own personal problem. And we look at it as our own personal concern. You know, it's your relationship with Jesus, therefore you have to make the time. But do you know that within family, we can influence and encourage each other to do that? I actually need Lucas, my gorgeous husband, to be on the page with me about this. Because it is so easy for me to go, "Oh no, well, there's just this, that and the other thing to do." So even though I was going to set aside this time for a Sabbath rest, even though I was going to set aside this time for a day with the Lord, even though I was going to set aside this time, there's this and this and this and this that needs to be done.
And what ends up happening over a period of time is that we grow so restless and so energyless that we don't know how to stop. And within family, we can be encouraging each other to take that time. It means that we turn off the guilt. Oh, but you said that you would blah, blah, blah. And actually encourage the time with God. When's the last time that you spent time with God? Not, oh, when did you have a quiet time last? You seem so... Not that. But hey, when was your last Sabbath? Are you having one of those? How are you spending it? Because, you know, Sabbath is not just about taking a day off from work. It's about refilling and re-energizing and reconnecting with God. It's about that renewal that happens in our soul. And as family, we need to be encouraging each other to do that, whatever your family context is. How are you helping other people in their rhythm, and how are other people helping you? Do you have people around you to help you with this stuff, to encourage you with it, to get alongside you and say, hey, our roots are interlocked. Let's make sure that we're encouraging each other along this path. Is it okay for your family unit, whatever that looks like, is it okay for that family unit to say, let's be accountable about this stuff? Let's do it together. Let's talk to each other about this. Let's keep each other accountable to it. Because a healthy family rhythm challenges each other about these things. I wonder, just in this moment as we finish off, I would love for you just to bow your heads and close your eyes, because I want you to ask God what he is asking you, what he's saying to you at the moment. Because everybody's context and situation is different here. The first thing that I want you to ask is, who is God gathering around you as family? And I don't mean... step aside from your nuclear family, because for some of you, he'll be prodding you and saying, actually, you've stepped aside from your nuclear family enough, and I want to draw you back into that. But for others, you may be thinking about friends or leaders or people that you should be inviting into your world and into your life. Who is it that God is placing on your heart now that he's wanting you to invite into that inner circle, so that you can create that rhythm together? A rhythm of inviting, a rhythm of challenging, a rhythm of showing compassion, a rhythm of solitude and renewal. And the next question I want you to ask is, what is he asking you to do? And for some of you, it'll be that invitation part. He's asking me to invite someone into my inner life. For others, it'll be he's actually asking me to challenge that person that I've been avoiding. He's asking me to step out in that area of compassion that I've been putting off because I didn't want to start or didn't know how to start. For some of you, he'll be saying, I want a Sabbath with you. I want some solitude. And I want you to commit to that. And Father, I pray that as we respond to you now, that you would speak really clearly to each of us. Show us what you want from us, how you want us to pursue that rhythm, how you want us to pursue each other so that we can grow together with interlocked roots. So that we can become strong and tall and reach the destiny that you have for us, so that we have a family unit around us that models the one Jesus that you modeled to us with your disciples. I thank you that you never intended for us to do this life alone, that you always wanted for us to have those close by, that familial language, being able to spur each other on and equip and inspire each other toward what you had for us. And Lord, I pray that across this room, as we respond and we say yes to you, Lord, that you would show us new life and you would show us change. I pray, Lord, that as people across this room say, yes, I'm going to spend more time in solitude with you, Lord, that as we do that, you would speak profoundly to us. You would show us what that restful heart feels like. I pray that as new relationships of mentoring spring up across this place, that people's lives would be changed. They would be spurred on for greater things and encouraged to do more in you. Just give us the courage to follow through as we say yes to you, Lord. In Jesus' name. Amen. You know, in a giant sequoia tree, and you look up at it like that, you can't really get the idea. But look at that. There's a couple of blokes abseiling off one. You can barely see them. That's destiny right there. Look at this. Yeah? The biggest living organism on the earth is a giant sequoia tree. Just purely the mass of their trunk is so significant, and it could only be that way because of the roots going down.